In the next 15 minutes, I would like to share with you guys our hot topic of the year. At least that's what we consider in California. We would like to share with you our process of developing requirements and implementation of the requirements for vaccine storage equipment for providers receiving VFC vaccine doses. We'd like to share with you guys the plan and materials that we have developed to assist us in the implementation of the new requirements. And of course, we can't leave out the challenges and lessons learned along the way. So I feel like I'm going to be preaching to the choir with this slide, but I thought that we would take just a couple of minutes really sort of going over the issues that revolve around most of the refrigerator units that are used among most of our providers. Household combination units are truly, you know, inappropriate for vaccine storage because they're truly meant to store food and beverages. They have a greater temperature fluctuation within the units, and you know your deli bins tend to have a colder temperature so that, you know, your, you know, meats are not spoiled. And this is the very thing that poses a threat to the vaccines that we're storing in these units. Capacity really wasn't a big issue many years ago, but it certainly is right now because providers really do not have an adequate usable space within their household refrigerators to store the number of vaccines that they need to have on inventory to immunize children. And with recent years, more and more vaccines are coming in, you know, syringe packaging, and they're bulkier and they take way more space than vials used to do. So we see more and more medical assistants in California really coming with different innovative ideas to fit more vaccines in the same space that they've had for years. Vaccine management actually is tied to this and is very, very difficult to manage and organize an overcrowded refrigerator and keep products in the same area and really do inventory. We hear from our medical assistants that they spent quite a number of hours on their knees trying to organize the refrigerator because they have to provide inventory data with their orders in order for us to approve their vaccine requests. And one of the things that usually it's what we call, you'll see throughout the presentation, our aha moments, is that providers really store tens of thousands of dollars worth of vaccine at a given time in their refrigerators. And this is dollars, public dollars and private dollars invested in their refrigerator units. So let's look at the storage practices in other industries. You see to your left over there, you see, you know, a familiar refrigerator that you see in even the most smallest of your gas stations storing about $300 worth of deli sandwiches and sodas in a really nice commercial grade unit. Commercial refrigerators are commonly used in restaurants to keep vegetables and meats fresh. And of course, all of the flowers that we all get on Valentine's are really stored in nice commercial true refrigerators and many other brands, and they are really kept at 40 degrees to prevent the flower petals from freezing and keeping your flowers fresh. I took a picture of the bottom refrigerator where it says local car wash. You can't read it over there, but I asked for creamer for my coffee on my corner car wash, and he pulls it out of this really neat under-the-counter refrigerator that cost him $2,000. And so wine connoisseurs also spent quite a bit of money in you know, storing vaccines. I mean, storing in vaccine store. Well, I don't know if they do. Actually, they probably do. In wine refrigerators. So then you look at storing practices in our provider offices, and this is something that you still see throughout, you know, provider offices. On the very left, you have what it may look like a very nice organized refrigerator. However, if you look at the top, this is a combination unit, and vaccine is really stacked up really, really high, right underneath that cold air vent, which is blowing air at 0 degrees Fahrenheit, right underneath that vaccine. You probably at the bottom see the really nice trays, but what you also see is that all of the vials have been taken out of the boxes because they can fit more vaccine in that form. And if you were to open those bins, you would cringe like we did. So the vaccine, the dormitory style refrigerator to your right, to my right, really can see, you know, how completely inappropriate this is. And this is exactly where we, our providers, are storing vaccines that are going into, you know, my nieces, nephews, and, you know, children's arms. Going back to your nice refrigerator, storing your flowers at 40 degrees. Going back to our storage units. So we really said we have to do something about this. And about 15 months ago or so, I've sort of lost track of time, we actually formed a group within our immunization program, and we decided to really create our storage and handling work group that would actually create some tasks at, really aimed at developing a standardized policy for vaccine storage equipment that our providers have to have in California. Part of the tasks for our work group was really to develop specifications for the recommended units. Not only tell providers that they needed to have a refrigerator-only unit, but really what that meant. In us making the recommendations, we also thought it was important to look at the availability of such units. We could actually make a recommendation of a unit, but you know, are they really accessible for the provider? Are they really expensive? What are the choices for the providers? And so that was part of the task for our work group. Of course, it's very difficult to implement a policy without friendly materials for the MAs and the practices, so that was another important task for the work group, which was to come up and recommend materials to go along with our efforts. And we have about 4,100 active VFC providers in our state. So part of the important part of the group was to come up with an implementation plan for the requirements. So after many months of deliberation, our work group came up with an approach for implementing our requirements. The work group thought that it would be very important to really phase in our approach and our implementation, sort of like test the waters first, really start with your small providers, start with your new providers that you really didn't know any better, they're enrolling in our program, so start fresh with them, and really look at providers that were actually needed to replace their unit because their current unit had failed. Also focusing on providers that really had the highest volume of VFC vaccines received from us. They are truly the ones that store the most vaccine, and they're the ones that are vaccinated the majority of children with, you know, potentially frozen vaccines. So we decided as a state that we would actually tie this into already defined categories, and we tied it to our tier order frequency, and it's tiered order, but you know, we shed so many tears that we said it's, you know, tier order frequency. So we decided not to have any other different designation, but to stick with our, you know, order frequencies that were implemented with VIMBA, you know, high, medium, and low volume providers. One of the important things that we did was share this, of course, internally within our VFC program staff and immunization program, but also we communicated our plan and our implementation plan with our stakeholders and shared this with AAP and AAFP members of our California Immunization Committee. And when this was shared with them, I wasn't present, but I know when it was shared, they said like, well, duh, it's sort of like a no-brainer, and how come you're only doing it to some providers and not with all? So it was interesting. So here were the work group recommendations, and basically are, like I said, based on tier order frequency. Starting with the very high volume providers, we added a category of our own. Those providers receiving over 10,000 doses of vaccines per year from us are required now to have a pharmacy grade or biologic grade refrigerator and a standalone freezer unit. The next group are high volume providers, or those providers receiving anywhere from 2,000 to 10,000 doses of vaccine per year. They are required to have a refrigerator only unit with an 11 cubic feet minimum and a standalone freezer. The next group of providers, we're sort of lumping them in one same category, medium volume and low volume providers, those providers receiving under 2,000 doses of vaccine, we decided that we would highly require or recommend for them to have a refrigerator only unit or a pharmacy grade or biologic grade under the counter unit, but we would not require them to have it. You see the little asterisk? That was our fine print. So what we told providers is, if you're a low and medium volume provider with an existing household refrigerator or freezer combination, you would be allowed to keep the current unit as long as it meets required specifications. So we were grandfathered them into the requirements. However, in the event that the unit fail, or if the unit does not conform with the new requirements, that the providers would be able to replace the unit, would have to replace the unit with a refrigerator-only unit and a standalone freezer unit. We also made it clear for them that if they decided to keep their unit, that if they had any vaccine loss as a result of the unit failing or because it did not conform with the requirements, that they would be solely responsible for reimbursing the program for the cost of vaccines or replacing those vaccine doses lost. This usually does the trick. So our work group quickly found out that it wasn't sufficient enough to tell providers, you need a refrigerator-only unit and you need a freezer or a standalone freezer. We felt it was necessary for us to really spell out what the specifications were. So what we did is we took CDC specifications or requirements and added a few of our own that we actually came up with as we were doing research for our new requirements. One of the things we found out is that refrigerator-only units, some of the units that are manual defrost or cyclic defrost, have what's called a cooling plate or internal back plate in the back of the unit that actually tends to form ice. And if we have seen the unit at a store, we wouldn't have thought anything bad of it. But the problem is that we actually saw it in provider offices with a sheet of ice about this thick all along the back of the unit. We also saw units, and I think you really can't see in the pictures, but literally a little river running through the unit because as the whole defrosting process takes place, you see water running in the back of the unit. So we added that as a requirement. We also added the second arrow. We found out that there are some really neat refrigerator-only units that have a switch in the back of the unit. So you press that switch and it goes automatically from an all refrigerator-only unit to an all freezer unit, which I thought, hey, that's cool, but not so cool for vaccines. So we make sure that we added that to our required specifications. And of course, we included information about freezers. In our search for the right unit, we discovered that there were units that have really, really cool features, or what we call highly desirable features, which we could not require our providers, but thought it was important enough to mention. So if a provider was going all out and getting a nice unit, it would be nice enough for us to tell them, hey, you know, if you're going to get this, it would be nice if you can get a unit with a built-in certified thermometer, because they are out there, and doors with negative pressure self-closing doors, so that, you know, that call on a Tuesday after a long weekend that somebody forgot to close the door, you know, it wouldn't be there, because when you go grab your soda at your, you know, grocery store, you open that door and that door automatically closed. So we thought, you know, that would be important to have. Security locks, glass doors, wire racks are, you know, highly desirable but not required. And when you're talking about pharmacy or biologic grade units, we thought it was important enough to make sure that we told providers that these units should be backed up by an electric generator, and they truly should be serviced routinely for optimum performance. Freezers. We're going to talk about freezers when we talk about our challenges, but freezers, we really recommended automatic defrost, just because the whole process of having a backup unit when they're defrosting, it was a challenge. And chest freezers are, you know, very well known for using less energy, they're more energy efficient, and in case of a power failure, they really maintained a temperature for several days. So we went with chest freezer as a recommendation versus an upright freezer. So here's our implementation timeline. Wendy mentioned the letter in September, and after many, many months of work, in September of 2008, we actually launched phase one. We communicated with providers the new requirements via mailing, and we actually included our first educational piece. We took all of the vaccine storage guides or guidelines and put them in a friendly format for our providers, so that our provider agreement would not be 7 pages, but it would be 2 pages plus a nice poster. The second mailing is scheduled to go out in a couple of days and is basically a reminder notice for providers of the requirements that are going into effect in July of 2009. And we just created the second piece that is going to go with that mailing, and is basically a refrigerator buying guide. Phase two really starts in July of 2009, and that will apply to all providers in phase one, your new providers and your providers with unit failures or vaccine losses. And then it would also include all of your high volume providers and super high volume providers that will have to, you know, implement the requirements. A letter is going to go out as well, and then we will monitor compliance through quality assurance review visits. Many people have asked us, so when are you going to require all of your 4,000 providers to go to refrigerator-only units, and we said, well, sometime, but at this point it's undetermined, and we're still working on phase two, so. Our information and education section actually created a slogan for our campaign, something that would really resonate with medical assistants, and the slogan that they came up with was set up for success. So we actually incorporated this slogan in our materials that we developed to really help communicate our requirements. We definitely needed a piece of material, something that we could leave with the provider when we were talking about our requirements. We also used existing tools, and I know Booz Allen Hamilton had developed a plan for every part tool. Really, you can plug in the number of doses that you have in your refrigerator, and it automatically has a formula to calculate how much cubic feet you would need based on the dimensions of the different products. I have a picture in there, so I'll show it to you in a few minutes, slides. So here are some of the materials that we've developed. I think some of you may have seen these materials, and they really just highlight the best practices for vaccine storage. And when we were going out to provider offices, or as we go out to provider offices, it's helpful if we can show how a refrigerator should look. So we can tell them, you really need a unit because you need to leave a space underneath the vent. You need to allow for space to circulate, for air circulation around the vaccine and around the walls of the refrigerator. So this has been a very useful tool to share with providers. This is our newest piece, which is a refrigerator buying guide. We basically incorporated the requirements in the first portion. We added the specifications for a reminder, but the coolest part is the one in the back, which really tells providers three easy steps to buy your refrigerator. Remember, when we're doing this, we're talking to MAs and we're talking to busy clinic managers in the practice, and when we're telling them that they need to get a new unit, they want to know what to get. Just tell me what to get. And so one of the things that we decided to do was do a piece to assist them in figuring out what to get. Now, we know how much vaccine we give providers, but we don't know how much private vaccine they have in their refrigerator. So we may be giving them a very small portion of vaccine, but they may have a huge private stock in their refrigerator. So the first part really is sort of like a little quick worksheet to have providers just do an inventory and do a formula so that they can come up with the minimum cubic feet that they would need to store their vaccines. So the biggest thing that this piece really has is that we provide a couple of examples under the different sizes so that providers that need to buy a unit, they know more or less what to look for. We added, you really can't see it at the bottom there, but the third step is making sure that they do the research. This, we're not recommending they get this and only this type of unit, but these are just examples. So in creating this piece, we did a lot of research. And went to different websites and looked at, you know, a gazillion different refrigerator and buying guides because they exist. And one of the pieces of information that we found, according to Best Buy, the number one returns on newly purchased refrigerators is because they don't fit. So people eyeball it and they say, well, I think it's gonna fit, but it really doesn't fit. So we decided to put in our buying guide tips that providers could think before they bought their refrigerator. Make sure that they think about a warranty. Make sure that they figure out how they're gonna get rid of their old refrigerator. Making sure that they have enough space, because if they're buying our combination refrigerator, now they're gonna be buying two units. So they need to figure out where they're gonna put both units. And of course, two different units require two different temp logs. So we just finished field testing our two different versions of our refrigerator temp log. And we have added a section for documenting an action taken if the temperatures are outside of the recommended range. We, believe it or not, in California, our warning sticker was only in English. So we just recently revised that and did an English and Spanish within one sticker. So that's part of our suite of materials. And here's a sample of the plant for every part. I don't know if, you know, some of you may have seen it, but this is really cool because as you're trying to convince a practice that they're gonna have to spend $1,000 on their refrigerator, they give you this look. But if you have this tool and you tell them, Dr. So-and-so, you have $75,000 worth of refrigerator in your unit. If you lose this, you're going to have to come up with $75,000. So when you tell them $1,000, it's a different perspective. So this is a really, really good tool to help them really understand what we're trying to tell them. One of the things that our work group really stressed, it was the fact that we can do a letter, we can do a material, but if something is not personalized for me or for my practice, I may not pay that much attention to. So they really insisted that we would do a practice profile, something that it would tell providers exactly what apply to them. So we came up with a practice profile sheet that tells them their PIN, their address, and it also tells them their vaccine information, how frequently they should order, and it also includes information about their unit for their own practice so that it's personalized for them. So that's going in our mailing. And this is our new kid on the block. This is our EZIC website, our new VFC website. And what we're calling it is an easy stop for immunization resources. We actually have tried to combine a couple of things in here, actually three. Our immunization training modules are included in here, in the middle portion, and we also have a lot of resources for our providers. Storage and handling information, it's of course included in here. And by the way, we launched online recertification this past year, and that's the arrow over there, and they did it through this website, so we strategically put it in here so that providers come visit this site, and so we did get quite a bit of traffic. So you probably want to know what our challenges were and what our aha moments were. And definitely challenges were there, they're still there, and I'm sure they will continue to be there. But one of the most important challenges was that we were actually doing something that we really didn't have a lot of data or research on the topic. It was fairly new for us, and we had to do a lot of reading, a lot of researching, a lot of driving. Wendy is part of the committee, going to Best Buy, going to all different stores, actually looking at refrigerators with our own eyes. And then reaching consensus in a large group setting, it is definitely challenging. Our state is pretty large, our immunization program, and we definitely wanted to get the buy-in from everybody. Do we apply it to only a small number of providers, or do we apply it to all 4,000 providers? So coming to consensus was very challenging. And we were definitely introducing a new concept. When we're telling providers, you need to buy a new fridge, they would tell you, what's wrong with my avocado-greened, 15-year-old, leaky, noisy refrigerator? It's storing vaccine just fine. So we were trying to change a frame of mind with the providers. And this is an interesting one. We put a lot of information online, and what we found out is that refrigerator and temperature monitor device companies were actually contacting VFC providers, and they were saying that they were the VFC representative for that company. So we got several calls from providers saying, well, you know, we got this unit because our VFC rep really recommended it, and they said that this was the best unit. So that's one of the challenges that we're still trying to work through, but it's definitely, you know, out there. And if we could do this again, if we could start all over, our aha moments are right below, which the first one is that not all refrigerator only units are created equal, like the convertible feature. You know, we thought that, hey, you know, how difficult it could be, there are refrigerator only units. And then in doing the policy, it was important to recognize that not everything is black and white, and you can do a policy, but there's going to be certain scenarios that are not going to apply to all providers. And developing guidelines, gosh, we thought we had a 8-page letter that had all of the possible information you wanted to know. And just when you thought you had answered all the questions, you got three more, and they're like, oh, man, they're good. We need to, you know, make sure that we incorporate that there. So it's a fluid process, a working process. And then I told you I was going to talk about freezers. Well, we focused so much on refrigerators, I forgot about freezers. And so people were asking, you know, what about this versus that? What about chest versus upright? What about, you know? So we really started, you know, focusing our energy on, you know, it's not that difficult, but, you know, nevertheless, we needed to do that. And, you know, the most important thing, you're talking to MAs, you're talking to busy practices, so just keep it simple, to the point. Tell me what to get is basically, you know, what the MAs really needed to have. And a couple of our field reps found that you can explain all you want, and then providers will tend to argue back and forth. But if you tell them it's a requirement, they'll tell you, where do I get it? You know, it's keep it simple. So you probably wanted to know if there was any pushback from our providers. Thus far, do we have any providers that are threatening to leave the program? You know, and basically, like I told you, providers were really just interested in finding out where to get the unit and what type of unit to get. It's not funny enough because it was, I'm calling it healthy discussions among our field representatives. But you know, we did get some pushback internally in trying to come up with an agreement. And of course, we're timing this at with our economy, and you know, it's not only California, but you know, we certainly have our fair share in times where Medi-Cal really was delaying payments for provider services. Really, they were in a pinch, and you know, our state got hit with employee furloughs. You know, every other Friday we were closed and unpaid, and we're trying to do this, so it's certainly a challenge. But according to the March 26 Dallas News, the economy in California is so bad that Californians are fleeing to Texas. California is too much of a struggle, so they're coming your way. So Texas, we're really paving your way when providers come, you know, to Texas. And I know there's other states that actually have developed such requirements. So I don't know if Texas has, but. So our next steps are pretty simple, evaluation of what we're doing. We really wanted to continue collecting more in-depth data on vaccine losses. And our biggest thing right now is we're getting ready to launch, well, we're working on two modules, our information and education. It's hard at work doing the storage and handling module for ECIC. The modules are geared towards medical assistance and our online training. And it's going to your right, I have put a picture. It's going to include a lot of interactive games, dragging and dropping to highlight the proper storage practices and units. I called it sharing the wealth or not, but a lot of these materials we have shared with other states. We have our graphic artist was wonderful, and you can modify the files and put your state's logos. There certainly, if you're interested, my contact information is there and our website is there. And I would like to give special thanks to our California Storage and Handling Work Group because they have done a tremendous amount of job in getting our state to where it is in the policy, and wish us good luck come July 1st.
Okay, we're going to open up the floor for questions. If you don't mind, if you have a question, could you please come to the mic in the middle?
Hey, Tony. Thanks, California. That was great. Just a couple of quick questions. I'll stand back away from the mic. For the temp logs, how do you go through thousands of temp logs every week? And since we know you're a VPOP pilot state too, is there any way we can get VTRAC's VPOP to do some of this work for us? Accountability and all that.
We actually are only going through the temp logs for 200 providers. We couldn't do it if it was required for all of our VFC providers, because that is something we have talked about on the state level, and there's no way we can do it. But in LA County, for the 220 non-public and nonprofit providers we work with, that's what our field staff are reviewing, and it's a challenge. We constantly having to follow up with them, but we found it is beneficial with the number of losses we've caught our potential losses we've caught, especially since a larger portion of the losses are in public health.
And I think there is a plan for VTRACs to have temperature logs, either uploading or something to the sort, but not with VPOP. At least we haven't talked about
it. Hi, I'm Monique Petrovsky from the state of Alaska, CDC Public Health Advisor. I have three questions, actually. One is, I recently was looking at some data from Alaska, and we looked at public providers versus private providers having an emergency plan, and we found that there was a significant difference between public providers not having an emergency plan if their equipment went down versus private. So I'm curious to see if you looked at data that way. The other question is, do you have any thoughts and experiences on alarms that you could share with us and or thoughts and experiences with different thermometers. Thank you.
As far as the policy, the difference between policies and procedures with our public providers, our public health clinics all have something in place. With some of them we've reviewed, they're old, so we're in the process of working with them to update them. A lot of them are to the old kind of refrigerators they had before. They had alarms in them, and you know, they're 10 or 15 years old, so we're in the process of working with them to update that as part of our planning and as things have changed in our system. And as far as our nonprofit providers, I can only say we really have data on it, other than, you know, they say they have it. Not all of them have it. Some of them don't have acceptable, let's say maybe 10% of them had an acceptable policy and procedure. A lot of them were having to work with giving up templates as this is what you need to put in it, and then telling them, no, you need to actually write your own policy and procedure and steps into this template. Because a lot of them put, you know, when they've experienced a loss, we gave them the template and said, okay, you need to write a policy and procedure, and what they sent back to us was our template. So we turned around and said, no, you need to actually write something with your clinic letterhead and spelling out what you would do and what staff are going to be responsible for it, and then making sure that everybody in your staff knows where it is and what to do. As far as the rest of it, as far as alarms, we don't have a lot of experience with alarms. I know that LA County for our public health clinics have been looking at an alarm system that involved, it was Veritech, with our downturn in our budget, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to continue with that. Thermometers, there's a number of different kinds of digital thermometers out there. Mostly what we're making sure that the providers know, it has to be NIST certified, and that it is the biggest thing.
No, I think, yeah. We provide actually new providers enrolling in our program with a thermometer for their unit. Yeah, not much research on other than certified thermometers.
Which is one of our next steps.
Kevin from Michigan, just a quick question for Wendy. You mentioned something about that you were seeking reimbursement or you weren't seeking reimbursement of the providers that lost vaccine. And if you are, what percentage of reimbursement are you getting from the overall losses that you have occurred?
It's not something we're doing at this time, but this is something that we're in the process of writing a policy for. It would be if they've had their second or third loss. It wouldn't be actual monetary. It would be reimbursing us for the vaccine. Basically, what they'd have to do is purchase the vaccine themselves and then give us the receipts to show that they purchased the vaccine up to that loss, or if they don't have that ability, we would negotiate, you know, you need to purchase a certain percentage of this to make up for that loss that you had, especially when it's due to your own neglect.
And we do have a statewide policy, our three strike policy, where, you know, which is the same thing. If a provider loses vaccine due to negligence, we issue a first letter of notification where the provider has to sign and acknowledges that they have a loss. And then depending on how large that second or third loss is, then they're required to reimburse us in vaccine. So we hold their vaccine until they reach that dollar amount. In vaccines, and usually they're so mortified at their loss that, you know, we either work a compensation plan over time, or we've had providers that said, I'll just pay you $140,000. I don't want to have to deal anything, you know, owe anything. But yeah.
Just to follow up on Kevin's question, I'm Terry from Michigan. I'm the BFC coordinator there. My question is about certified thermometers. We have a huge effort in our state to have a certified thermometer in every provider office. However, certification expires or they lose their certificate. And we can visually see that it is a certified thermometer. We know which ones are certified, but there's no certificate. So now the concern is, okay, everyone has one. When do they replace it? As far as vaccine reimbursement, we've been collecting money a long time on our providers. We have a policy that they have one loss and then that's it. We have no exceptions for expired vaccines. If they expire, they pay. And if it's a storage and handling loss, you had some out of your control losses like power failure or refrigerator, we feel that is in their control and they can have a sensophone or something to alarm them that they need to get there and remove their vaccine. So we have collected about $200,000 in vaccine reimbursement that we use to directly purchase vaccine back into the VFC program. So it is doable. And recently we're just building our vaccine inventory into our MICR, our registry, and we can see every single physician's inventory for at the state level, at the health department level, and temperature logs are required. And the health department receives the temperature logs for every provider they have enrolled, and they have to be reviewed before they can order their next order of vaccine. So that's where we're at with ours, but we're struggling with the certified thermometers.
You're going to get a little help with those thermometers. Right now, we're doing a little research with NIST. And so and they're going to help us come up with some guidelines and some recommendations on those thermometers and also trying to get it where you all can do the certification yourself. So.
Thank you. Okay. I wanted to say thanks for a really good presentation. It had a lot of great information that I think is going to help a lot of our states. One question that I had is, once the requirement goes into effect and you come across providers who are unwilling or unable to replace their units, I'm wondering what kind of steps might be taken at that point if the requirement is in place and there's a provider that cannot or will not replace their storage unit, would the next step be then to withhold vaccine? And I wonder how that might affect things like vaccine rates and potentially CDC feedback, because in Georgia, we'll put providers on temporary leave and not ship them vaccine if they have gone against their provider agreement in one area or another. And we got some feedback from the CDC on that with concerns about making sure that providers have vaccine in stock. And then to the point of temperature logs, I just wanted to offer up that in Georgia, all of our program associates are required to do a random call to 10 VFC providers per month and collect those 10 temperature logs so that we can kind of keep a running review of their temperature logs.
Well, we certainly recognize that that will inevitably happen, and one of the things that definitely will take case-by-case situation, but if you look at a provider that has been storing vaccines and it's jeopardizing vaccines, we definitely temporarily suspend that provider until they can replace that unit, so that it doesn't do us any good to keep a provider in a unit if he cannot purchase a unit and you see that they're storing vaccines in a situation like the pictures. It certainly depends if the provider is a borderline medium volume provider and they're, you know, it's not completely overcrowded, and we can do certain things like reduce their order size or request them to order more frequently. But ultimately, I think, you know, we're looking at making sure that the vaccines that it's going into the kids' arms have been stored appropriately and they have the right equipment.
We have any more questions?
I'm just saying, from Michigan, one of the strategies that we use, if a provider has had a loss, now we're saying you have to pay $2,000 back. We will say, if you upgrade your refrigerator, if you buy a system home or anything, we'll deduct that from the cost. So the equipment goes back into the provider office, and then in turn makes it a much better provider.
Right.
And they can feel better about their loss and reimbursing us.
Let's thank our presenters.